Well, it's almost time for our interview with for our actuality lineup. And today's interview is an interesting one. We're talking about cybercrime, which is on the increase. It's a growing endemic globally, a crime in which the perpetrators are shrouded with a significant veil of anonymity and which affects both individuals and corporations in both the public and private sectors, respectively. With incidents on the rise, current South African laws do not effectively criminalize this kind of conduct. So this is according to Zakir Mohammed, director of the corporate investigation sector of the dispute resolution practice, and he works for the commercial law firm Cliff Decker Hoffmeyer. We're going to be speaking to him, inshallah, this morning with regards to this particular topic, cybercrime being on the increase. And, you know, when you think about cybercrime, what comes to mind a lot is the banking sector. That is where we see a lot of the cybercrime taking place. Also, if you're in business, then obviously you'll understand that as well. And many of us are using our phones, our smartphones, to do our banking, to make payment for almost anything today. And, it makes things so easy if you think about it. It's just, taking out your phone, logging into your banking website and clicking buttons, and obviously your payments are being made. You can check on your balances, all sorts of things that can be done within the banking sector these days, just on your phone. You know, it's something that we always speaking about with regards to the... how we actually work. So inshallah, we are going to take a quick break. Our guest is here, so maybe we're going to just speak on that topic right now. Brother Zakir Mohammed, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Very interesting topic, and as we're saying, cybercrime is on the increase. So what does the statistics show us with regards to the growth of cybercrime and the financial losses, especially with regards to banks?
So there's definitely, like you said, been a significant increase in the amount of cybercrime attacks that we've experienced in the last couple of years. The South African Banking Risk Information Center released their stats for 2018, and in those stats they found that there's been a 75% increase in cybercrime and digital banking platforms in 2018, mm-hmm. with a cumulative loss of 262 million rand. So it's quite significant. Wow. We're talking about a lot of money. Certainly mm-hmm. in my practice, the amount of calls that I've received from clients who have lost money, I mean, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of rands. In some instances, it can be millions, depending on, internet banking scams and the like.
Okay. Now, what are the reasons for the growth in the increase? I mean, when you think about it, we all trust our banks every time there's some new feature that they have on the smart apps that they offer us. We're very quick to use it. So what would the reasons for the growth be? Is it because there's lack security? What is the reason?
So there's several reasons that come into play. I think the one reason I must state before I get into the others is the cybercrime is big business for cyber criminals, and this is because of a veil of anonymity with this kind of criminal. You don't know where the attack is coming from. You can't foresee it. It's not physical in nature because it's done over an electronic platform. Then the second and the biggest reason is there's a lot of internet users out there, and the internet users are growing on a daily basis. I mean, I think you mentioned it, how attached we are to our cell phones and how convenient it is for us to do so mm-hmm. much using our cell phones. I mean, aside from banking, we can order our groceries online. Yes. So much we communicate online. Nowadays, we don't even pick up the phone and talk to one another. We communicate via WhatsApp. So there's a lot of internet users out there. But a lot of people don't understand the technology that we're using and the risks that we're using. So it's also user knowledge of mm-hmm. what the particular risks are. And people are not being careful when they're dealing with internet banking transactions. And also when they're clicking on attachments to SMSs they receive, or if they receive emails, and these are called phishing emails, clicking on links to suspicious yes. emails. You know, it's that kind of user activity that ultimately results in these kinds of breaches. So on the one hand, the rise is because there's a lot of internet users, but it's also because there's a lack of knowledge and cybersecurity controls in a lot of businesses as well.
Mm-hmm. So what are the inherent risks of cybercrime, not only to individuals, but more importantly to businesses as well?
So obviously for individuals, it's a loss of money, and in those instances, it can be significant sums of cash, which could be detrimental to any individual. For organizations, there's several. Obviously, the financial loss is one, and that financial loss is not just the loss of the money being victim of the particular cybercrime, but then it's the cost involved in trying to investigate that particular incident, trying to deal with what needs to be done to manage the situation and calling in the relevant experts, etc. And then there's also the reputational impact that can be had on the particular business.
Yes.
For example, there might be a loss of client confidence in the business's ability to maintain confidential information, and this is quite relevant when it comes to a particular data breach. So for a business, I mean, this kind of attack can result in a lot of damage to you know, the reputation of the particular business.
But, you know, when you think about it now, you've given us a whole, you know, a whole range of reasons why this is happening. But banks are now saying that they would prefer to have their clients, you know, interact via these platforms rather than coming into a physical bank environment. So when this happens now, do we here in South Africa have legislative measures in place to address this growing phenomenon? And is our data protected, and what does it all entail?
So we do have legislation at the moment in South Africa that deals with cybercrime, but at the moment our legislation is a bit silo-based. So we've got the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, and that is a piece of legislation that has a few provisions that deal with cybercrime. There's just about four provisions, and this legislation was enacted some time ago, so it's a little bit outdated. We've also got the Criminal Procedure Act, which is the act that is used to investigate cybercrime. We've got the and this name is a bit long, the Regulation of Interception of Communications and Provision of Communication-Related Information Act. A lot of us know this as RICA. And this is a piece of legislation that also assists with the investigation of cybercrime. It deals with the unlawful interception of emails and the like. And then we've also got the Protection of Personal Information Act, and that is our key piece of data privacy legislation, or the protection of people's personal data. Now, that piece of legislation is currently being enacted, and we're waiting for many of its provisions to come into effect. So as you can see, there's a few pieces of legislation. So we don't have one comprehensive piece of legislation at this stage that completely addresses cybercrime. However, we do have the Cybercrime Bill, which we're waiting for it to be tabled and passed by Parliament. And this bill has been a bill for the last number of years. And once it becomes law, it will be a comprehensive piece of legislation that will address cybercrime, the investigation of cybercrimes, etc. So hopefully we are moving in the right direction. But at the moment, I don't think our cybersecurity laws are, you know, sufficiently strong enough to deal with this kind of scourge. But the one thing that I must mention... So the one thing I must mention is, you know, when it comes to a crime like cybercrime, you've got the laws, etc., and the laws are particularly important. But because there's a veil of anonymity around this particular crime, you must remember that any piece of legislation that is criminal in nature is geared towards prosecuting someone for it. Now, when you've got cybercrime, if you don't know who the perpetrator of the crime is, who do you prosecute? So to deal with the scourge of cybercrime, on the one hand, we must have this kind of legislation to act as a deterrent and to help our prosecuting authorities prosecute. But I think the most important thing that I'll stress is obviously user authority and user knowledge. For all of us taking the initiative to understand the platforms that we're using on the electronic front.
All right, talking about that, are there precautions that businesses and individuals can take to mitigate the potential risk of becoming a victim of cybercrime?
Yes, there's quite a lot, so I'm going to go through the list. I'll start off with individuals, because I think that boils down to user behavior, both in your personal capacity as well as in your businesses as well. I think when you're dealing with the internet, always be cautious, be vigilant in what you're doing, educate yourself about the risks, and on the same side, if you're an organization, educate your employees on the various risks and scams that are doing the rounds, so that's quite important. Be ready of password sharing. A lot of us seem to be very lax when we come to our passwords. don't use easy and simple passwords that anybody can detect. So don't use a password of your favorite pet or the first car you drove, etc. Use something that's going to be very difficult to detect. They say that one of the best passwords to use should be between 6 to 10 characters long. It should have a capital letter, it should have some numbers in there, it should also have some characters in there, which makes it very difficult for cyber criminals to detect. So be wary of password, simple passwords. Also, be careful of shoulder spying. I always use this as an example. A lot of us, when we've flown somewhere, you may have seen someone working on their laptop in a plane. Now, when you're sitting on a plane, you're obviously sitting very close to one another, so the person behind you or next to you can see what you're doing. So be careful of that. There's actually a screen that you can buy so that the person next to you can't see what you're doing on your laptop, but you obviously can see what you're doing. When it comes to emails, if you're receiving emails and it's an email from from someone that you don't know, be very vigilant. Look at the header of an email. So, for example, if you know that you generally communicate with me, zakir@cdh.com, if that's my normal email address, and all of a sudden you receive an email that says zakircdh@gmail.com. Now, be wary of something like that, because that could be a hacker trying to elicit some information from you. And also look at the content of the email. Sometimes with email scams, you might find that you need to pay for a particular service that you've done. And let's say you need to pay an amount of 100,000 rand, and all of a sudden you receive an email that says, you know what, before you make the payment, we've changed our banking details. So please can you pay it into the following banking detail. What you then need to do is verify the banking detail by phoning the person that you usually deal with. Don't use a phone number that you receive in that particular email, but use the phone number that you normally communicate with that person with, or go onto the internet and find the relevant contact details independently of that email. So taking that kind of precaution, I think for businesses should have cybersecurity controls in place, so the relevant software, etc., to detect this kind of activity. Businesses can also have cyber risk insurance cover, which is becoming quite a big thing. I said verify banking details before making a payment. Also, beware of when you use Wi-Fi hotspots. A lot of us love free things. I'm also one of those people that do. And we love free Wi-Fi wherever we go. But be careful, because what can also happen is sometimes hackers set up their own Wi-Fi hotspots at public points so that they can then access your computer system. So, for example, if you're at the airport, and the normal airport Wi-Fi would be a free airport Wi-Fi _1, and that's the legitimate one. What a hacker might do is they might set up a Wi-Fi network that says free airport Wi-Fi _2 or something to that effect. So you might mislead yourself into thinking that it's, you know, the legitimate network, but then you end up entering into the hacker's network. So be wary of that. And I think just be vigilant, and also don't, a lot of us are guilty of just also clicking on SMS links or clicking on links in emails because we promised a free trip or we promised to win some money, etc. And that's usually when people get fall victim to phishing scams. So be wary of clicking on links that you don't know the source of where that email is coming from. You know, I can use one example of something that I received. I received an email from my bank a few months ago. Because they were implementing a new system, right? And over the course of the last few years, I'd received my statement, so I more or less knew they would address me as Dear Zakir Muhammad. So I knew that's always how my email started, etc. And then off the bat, I received an email, and it said Dear ZA Muhammad. So I noticed that particular difference, and that was a red flag that made me think, okay, let me not click on anything, because the email wanted me to check an attachment. So I didn't. What I did do is I went onto the internet, I went to my bank's website, found the phone number, and then I phoned them and I said, I received this email. Is this an email that came from the bank, etc.? And what is this about? And can you please explain it to me, because I'm not going to click on the link until I can verify that this is a legitimate email. I also knew that this was not an email address that I normally received emails from my bank from, and the bank basically told me that no, that there was nothing that came from the bank, etc. So it's taking that kind of step and just being vigilant and verifying things that you receive. Also take note of email content. You know, sometimes a red flag could be the grammar and the spelling that is used in a particular email, especially when it comes to these scams. But sometimes when I deal with these cases and I look at the evidence that that our clients have, or when we assess their system, sometimes I can see the red flags and you can see the spelling errors. You can see a change in phone number. So it's just taking that level of precaution.
So it's just basically people having to be more vigilant, just being aware that, you know, if your bank doesn't usually ask you for your PIN or things like that, and if you do get things, you know, these kinds of emails, then obviously just pick up the phone and call the bank rather than, you know, go ahead and respond to those emails and things like that. Or even call sometimes. You get people 100%. Calling you, you know. Okay, yeah. So as society – sorry, carry on.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I just wanted to say that on the PIN side, your bank will never phone you and ask you for your PIN or password, nor will they email you to do that, because that's obviously quite sensitive information, and that's geared towards your security. So also be careful of phone calls that you receive. We all, or most of us, receive calls every day from different organizations trying to sell our stuff, etc. So just be wary of those calls, because sometimes you're very busy and you receive a call and someone says, I'm calling you from your bank, and they're very smart in these particular calls in eliciting information from you. So be very careful of sharing your personal information on those particular calls, because you don't know where the call is coming from. And always the call will start off and the person will know your name. So they'll say, hi, how are you? So I always get those calls and I immediately know it's one of those calls that I don't want. When they're like, hi, can I please speak to Zakir Muhammad? And I'm like, yes, speaking. How are you today, sir? I'm like, I'm very well, thanks, and you. And then they'll start saying, we're calling you from our bank. We just want to verify that you're the right person. Can you please provide us with your ID number? Can you please provide us with your cell number? Now, be very careful of that, because you don't know who the person on the other end of the line is. But they're starting to elicit your personal information. So rather maybe take down their contact details, ask them if they are phoning from your bank, and then you phone your bank independently. You know, just be careful of sharing information through those calls as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, older people generally get caught up in this kind of thing because they don't really, are not very au fait with the internet a lot of the times, and they tend to give out the information because they're trusting. So obviously, I think a lot of the times they are very much at risk, and especially, you know, if you don't understand what is happening with all the changes that have taken place and you're used to the old conventional way of banking, this does pose a problem for older people.
Yeah.
As society, we also are becoming very comfortable with phrases like the deep web, the dark web, hackers, ethical hacking, that kind of thing. But does that give a false kind of security to the, you know, the Joe Soap, the average person? Because we start believing that cyber criminals will not really worry about the information on your computer, cell phones and other devices, you know. Generally, like I'm saying, people that are not in the know don't really think about these things.
100%. I think we've become so desensitized to this kind of thing because we hear about it all the time, we read about it all the time, and the only time that it really hits us or it really affects us is when we've actually found out that we've been the victim of a particular scam. But aside from that, there is a bit of complacency on our front to make sure that we educate ourselves or that we take this kind of issue seriously, because at the end of the day, we are very comfortable in our use of technology and mobile phones, but we're not careful about how we're using this technology. Now, obviously, technology has made our lives incredibly easy. It's made things simple for us in many respects, and that's the direction we're moving in, and it is a positive direction, but we also need to be vigilant and careful in how we're using the technology to make our lives easier, because you don't want to find yourself, you know, the victim of identity theft or the victim of an internet banking fraud or whatever the case may be. So I agree with you, and I mean, I can use one example of what the mindset of some people may be out there. It's a case that I dealt with last year, and I had a client phone, and they had lost 800,000 rand, and she asked for some advice, and I gave her some advice on the steps that she can take, etc. And one of the things she mentioned to me on the call, she said that, you know, this is the third time that we lost some money through this, you know, prepaying the deposit into the wrong banking account. And
wow.
You know, someone told me that, you know, it's just one of those things that we just have to accept at the end of the day as a reality that we faced, and unfortunately we just have to lose the money. And then I told her that, no, that's not the way you need to think about it, because you can't just accept it as that, because just by that sentence alone, she told me a few things. The one thing is that if this was the third time that they were hit with this kind of fraud, it meant that their systems were compromised. So what she needed to do was actually beef up their systems and get the cybersecurity controls in place. Also, the mindset cannot be that this is something that we must accept and make provision for it in our books of account. You know, for businesses to say, okay, fine, we're going to have a provision for cybercrime losses of X amount. That cannot be the mindset. The mindset has to be, we need to take the steps to make sure that we can mitigate this risk affecting us and our businesses. So we need to take what steps we can do. And I mean, another example is in our organization, one of the things we've implemented is, you know, periodic training. Our IT department is quite good at sending out emails, you know, every 3 weeks. Get the short training video just to alert us of a particular scam. Then whenever there's a new phishing scam that's doing the rounds, we get an email. And the importance of that is to remind us that, listen, this is still happening. And cyber criminals, this is their business. This is what they do every day. So they're going to find new ways to perpetrate this kind of crime. And it's important for us to be up to speed with the new kind of schemes that they come up with.
Absolutely. So when, you know, somebody has been in a situation like this, like the lady you spoke about, what happens? Do they, you know, what is the procedure for them, or anybody for that matter? I mean, if I found that I had my bank account hacked, or something went wrong and I see a lot of money has gone out, what would I have to do? Do I come straight to a lawyer? Do I go to my bank? What would the process be for the layperson?
So I think there's quite a few important things to do, and in that respect, time is of the essence. So do not delay in acting, especially when it comes to a cybercrime thing. But also be smart about what you do and how you do it. So if you've been a victim, or you find that you've lost a lot of money out of your bank account, phone your bank immediately, as soon as possible, because if you delay phoning your bank, it makes the recovery of that money so much more difficult. And what I mean by this, I can use two examples. We had a case where a particular client of ours, he received a phone call. There was some request to change his some card, or whatever the case may be, which was a strange call for him to receive. And then he also received a call from his bank, supposedly saying that, you know, that there's some activity noticed on the account or whatever, and can he please tick on a number on his phone. But what was basically happening is they were trying to basically get him to authorize an irregular payment. So the call that he received was from a fraudster. So he put the phone down, and then he phoned the bank himself, using the bank's legitimate number from the internet. And he told the bank, I received this call from you, and I just want to verify if this is a call from you. And he was then basically told that, no, but we can actually see in your account that an amount of $420,000 has just been transferred into another bank account. He said, I did not authorize that, so please stop it immediately. So he acted very quickly, and in that case, they were able to recover the money. But then we've got other cases where, you know, the money, it's been discovered that money's been transferred to a wrong bank account, the money's been missing from an account, but people have delayed in acting. But then the money's already been transferred into another bank account, and from there, it's been withdrawn, and then the money's lost, and then it's very difficult to recover the money. So notify the bank immediately. If you're not sure of what to do, then yes, definitely call the experts in. It helps to get that advice immediately, because there's a lot of factors come into play. There isn't a, you know, a set formula on how to handle this thing. But I always tell everyone that when you act, understand what it is that you're doing and what you're trying to achieve from that. So the first thing is mitigate any further loss So if you're an organization and you've been hit with a cybercrime attack, call the experts in immediately so that they can guide you through that particular process. And those experts would be a mix of legal experts. It would be IT forensic specialists as well, because they can come in and they can secure your systems immediately. The legal guys can come in and assist you with what you can possibly do from a legal side. So they can assist you with registering a criminal case. They can assist you in advising on what your possible civil recovery options could be, and that would be dependent on the circumstances of each case, because each case is going to be different. So I would say act very quickly and make sure that you get good advice at the outset to make sure that you don't lose any evidence that might be relevant for any ensuing legal process, that you don't lose any further funds, etc.
Okay. Brother Zakir, Jazakallah Khair for being with us and giving us all those excellent bits of information that I think people definitely need, because as we said, this is something that's increasing as the days go by, and it's something that I think will not stop, because people will always be finding ways to better them, you know, their ways of getting to people to get money out of people. So we appreciate this. Thanks for making the time, and have a good week ahead. Assalamu alaikum.
You too. Wa alaikum salam.
Shukran. Well, there you have it, some excellent advice on how to protect yourself from, you know, hackers and all sorts of other people that try to get money out of your bank accounts, or even, you know, any other platform that you may be accessing via your phones or your laptops. While it's time for the news, inshallah, in a few minutes, I'll be back with our financial slot thereafter.